We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to another episode of Who's Counting? And I am particularly pleased because this is part two of an amazing conversation with Scott Walter, who is the president of the Capital Research Center. In episode one, if you missed episode one, you should go back and listen to it. It's not a prerequisite, but it will help you understand the vast amount of left-wing money that exists in the space involving elections and politics in America. And in this episode, Scott is going to walk us through how that manifested itself in 2020. So Scott, again, Capital Research Center and you and your team have done amazing work to study and track and decipher all of the expenditures and the groups and all, but you've really come down with dramatic evidence of how charitable dollars impacted the 2020 election. So welcome back. Thank you for all your work. Why don't you take it from the top in terms of what happened in 2020? How did charitable dollars influence the outcome of the election in 2020?
Thanks. Well, and I'll give just the briefest of recap to remind folks. There are three rivers of money into politics: the hard dollars that go to campaigns and parties that people think of, the soft dollars or dark money that go to independent expenditure groups. That's actually a very tiny amount of money that just doesn't begin to have the effect that the lefties like to claim, although now they're ahead of, but far ahead in it, so I suppose we'll hear less about that now. But the big river that people miss is the 501c3. That's the tax-deductible nonprofit entities, and there's both the private foundation side, like the Ford Foundation and the rest, and then there's the grantee side, which is, say, various activist groups and think tanks and the rest that engage in public policy fights. And that's what we talked about last time. And the gist of the, to remember in the numbers, is the C3 nonprofit, nonpartisan dollars that go into public policy is about 4 to 1 greater than the hard and the soft money combined. Mm. And within that huge 4 to 1 amount of money that is nonpartisan nonprofits, there's almost a 4 to 1 left-right advantage. Mm. And the left has been using that big sector, again, things like Open Society Foundation, Ford Foundation, Carnegie,
Rockefellers, Kellogg.
Yes, it MacArthur goes on and on. We've also done a whole book on the horrors of all the foundations captured by the left who had right wing. I mean, I have donors who knew Mr. MacArthur.
Oh, my.
Who was, of course, quite anti-environmentalist and a grumpy, good old grumpy right wing guy. But foolishly, he literally said, "I made the money, now you figure out how to spend it."
Oh, my.
That was not a wise thing to do with billions of dollars, especially when you had a crazy left-wing son who hated him. So anyway, it took the son, I think, 2 or 3 years before he took the whole thing over. But the same with Pew Charitable Trusts,
yes,
who were the big pusher, as we said. Pew was the greatest pusher for campaign finance reform, which really means,
yes,
more power to the Pew folks. So the left uses that world for registering and getting out the vote, which is only legal if they're doing it in an absolutely nonpartisan way. And we're going to talk about Zuckbucks this hour. And don't think anybody's going to leave the hour convinced that, yeah, this was done in a nonpartisan way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's start with the big Zuckbucks in the 2020 election. The big picture is Zuckerberg and his wife gave.
This is the founder and CEO of Facebook.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg,
the
founder of Facebook, billionaire, and his wife gave. Although, and we don't even, by the way, we don't even, the press hasn't had enough interest to say, well, how exactly did you give it? Did you give it out of the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, which is their like sort of vaguely philanthropic-y thing that's not really a nonprofit, or did you just write it off your checkbook? Or
no, they don't. The press doesn't even care.
Yeah, the press doesn't even care about hundreds of millions of dollars from one billionaire going into the election. Actually, you're right. I have to digress on that, which is my understanding sitting here in Washington, D.C., from my wiser folks like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, there shouldn't be billionaires. There shouldn't be any billionaires, period. And so there shouldn't be billionaires. And Lord knows, we've been told for years by the likes of Sheldon Whitehouse and others that there certainly shouldn't be billionaires putting their money into politics. And yet one billionaire putting $400 million or more into one election, well, golly gee, that's, you know, what's to see there? Move along. Right. Shocking, shocking. But by the way, it may have been the Silicon Valley. I can't swear to this, but it may have been that the money went through his donor advised fund at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation.
Well, that's possible too. We don't know. No
yes.
one has asked.
But anyway, so he gives $400 million of Zuck Bucks, as I like to call them. And of course, it's to help conduct the election because, you know, Cleta, the left is always helping people. You don't help people. I don't help people. But the left is always helping
people.
Right,
of course.
So this supercharged the left wing's 501c3 nonpartisan nonprofit electioneering. Because as we discussed last time, we know that Soros and Ford and Carnegie and the Democracy Alliance and some other left, various big time left-wing funders, we know that they appear to have been doing this kind of thing at about $100 million a cycle, an election cycle, from what we can tell, where they give their money to C3s and then the C3s register and turn out voters. But so Zuckbucks, $400 million, is supercharging this effort in two very important ways. One is just the scale. That is more than four times what we know the, you know, 80, 90 million that Soros and company were doing in the 2012 presidential election. So quadruple the money. And by the way, that's quadruple the money
that
in addition. So there's no reason to assume that there wasn't another 100 million, you know, the usual 100 million or so going into it. But this is just Zuck alone is four times the money that previously would go into left-wing electioneering. And the really critical thing is, in the old model of Soros and Ford and Carnegie, the big private foundations would give it to public charities, with names like Voter Participation Center, always vague, neutrally sounding names. You'd never know they were crazy lefties. They sound like they're nice. They help voters participate. Well, that must be nice. They're helping people. So that was the old model. Zuckerberg's model has this dramatic change. Mm-hmm. He gave that money to two 501c3 nonprofits, but just as pass-throughs. Those two nonprofits gave hundreds of millions of his money to actual government election offices, which is just staggering. It was not illegal pretty much anywhere because nobody had dreamt that there would be private funding of elections. Now, again, the left's hypocrisy, they just bury the needle in the hypocrisy meter because they are opposed to privatizing trash collection. That's nice. An outrage. Mm-hmm. But one billionaire privatizing an entire election? Oh, again, nothing
Perfectly
to see
fine.
Here. Nothing to see here. So
what is the Center for Tech and Civic Life?
Yeah, the Center for Tech and Civic Life was the bigger of the two C3s that got the hundreds of millions of Zuckerberg's money. And I'll just say, I won't put a pitch for our good friend, J. Christian Adams. People should definitely read his article about Zuckbucks, written shortly after the election, called The Real Kraken. The Real Kraken. Because as a wise and long-term election observer, his view, even then, long before all of our, you know, we hadn't begun to do all of our good number crunching, but he was convinced early on that this was the single biggest factor in the election, was this Zuckerberg money going into local election offices. So literally when, you know, sometimes, it, well, we'll get into exactly where it went, but it's just staggering. Private billionaire money going to actual election
offices.
Well,
you make a pretty darn good observation there when you said they're opposed to privatizing anything.
Yes.
They, I mean, they don't want to privatize any aspect of government, regardless of whether it would function better. And then they flood the zone in election offices and turn them into Democrat voter turnout machines.
There are not many more core government functions than holding elections.
Right.
I will say, speaking of the Zuck Bucks and Center for Tech and Civic Life, that I am very proud that Capital Research was able to get both the New York Times and the Associated Press on the record before the 2020 elections. They both ran an article or two about this money. Now, it was very slanted. It was, oh, those awful Republicans in Congress won't give people the money they need to hold elections, so it's a shame that private individuals like Zuckerberg have to do this. But what they did put on the record, so when I say the, you know, when I'm about to go into the backgrounds of these wonderful C3s that got these hundreds of millions, they got on the record that the leadership of those places is partisans. That is to say, people with long histories of being partisan actors in elections. So we got that on the record, and you and I talked about this and others ahead of the election because we thought this was a disturbing thing. Ocasio-Cortez, I guess, didn't, but we did. And yet, to our outrage, there was no outrage. Mm-hmm. There was, even though there was some little bit of acknowledgement in mainstream media that it was going on, there's no outrage. And in fact, there's virtually no publicity, and not just no publicity by left-wing outlets like the New York Times, who would expect them to do that, but among conservatives. How many conservatives listening to this podcast heard about this before the election? How many of them were told, like, you should complain? This is something that, you know, nothing. And that's because of our slide number 32 here, which I refer to as the Cleta Mitchell Memorial slide. Conservatives don't notice process issues. But process really means the rules of the game. Mm-hmm. And most of us should have figured out in about the third grade kickball that if you get to make the rules, you get to pick who wins the game.
That's true.
So now, admittedly, election process is both very Byzantine and very ugly.
Well, it's not ugly. But it's just not. And that's one of the things I worry, that people are looking for some silver bullet and to explain 2020 and what, and as Christian says, as you noticed, Christian says, this is the real Kraken. And what we do about it is tedious. It's hard work. It's not something you, we're not going to be able to fix this by just sitting at home and complaining about it.
Yes.
So
we need to go to the Christian's websites, the Public Interest Legal Foundation,
right,
and they are some of the top people in the country in the trenches trying to get better, trying to resist worse process.
That's true.
And trying to create better process, because the rules are not what they should be. And again, conservatives got a big, ugly wake up call after this election,
mm-hmm,
to realize, gosh, these elections are messy. Gosh, the rules are weird. Gosh, things don't seem right.
The left changed the rules.
Yeah. And yes. And we didn't do enough fighting on that either. So, yes, this is something all conservatives have to educate themselves on, have to fight about. We are not the place for all that kind of thing. That's Public Interest Legal Foundation and other good folks. But what we are good is on the Zuck Bucks and the way the nonprofit world functioned in this.
That's right.
So
tell us how it worked.
Well, we have at capitalresearch.org, we have all of the major battleground states, we have individual reports on Zuck Bucks state by state, because that's the way to really see the massive partisan effect that it had. So, but I will give your listeners, I hope they go read all of those reports, but I'll give them a big spoiler. It's really just three simple things for Zuckbucks, whether you're talking Texas or Pennsylvania or Nevada. First, the money goes disproportionately to Democrat jurisdictions, especially the big cities, which are, of course, the pot of gold for them in elections. Second, the Democrat votes in the funded jurisdictions of the state surge much more than the Democratic votes in the rest of the state. I mean, you know, the election, there's a huge turnout in the election, and both parties did really well. In fact, it was the first and second greatest numbers of votes ever cast for president of all time, right? So there's lots of surging of votes, but the question is, what is the relative surging? Mm. And as we're going to see, the surges where Zuckbucks went were much, much better for Democrats than the surges in the unfunded parts of those states. In fact, that's the third and last point of my spoiler here for all of the Zuckbucks we're going to dig into in detail. You almost always in those battleground states, at least, you're going to see that the Democrat margin in the funded areas of the state is bigger, sometimes a whole lot bigger, than the Democratic margin for the entire state. So, you asked about the Center for Tech and Civic Life. That was the larger of the two grantees to the Zuckbucks, because again, all those hundreds of millions went to two C3s and then to your local election offices. So the other one that he gave money to, we'll be shorter on, but it's still worth mentioning. It's called the Center for Election Innovation and Reform. Again, Election Innovation and Research.
Right.
Nice, bland, safe sounding thing. Obviously, these are nonpartisan experts, Kalita. You should just listen to what they have to say. You can trust them. Lord knows all of the newspapers and others reporting on this completely trust them. In fact, they're in the news now because they are mixed up in the offer to defend any election official anywhere in America.
From citizens who might ask them questions.
Yes. Citizens need to shut up and do what they're told, as we know.
That's
what being a good citizen means. So they got a paltry 50, 60 million. We're not quite sure because, again, they're not disclosing until the last possible second. We haven't gotten to that in the
We'll get that
cycle.
November. We should get that in November.
Their fiscal year ends, I believe. Oh, wait a minute. No. I'm going to get that wrong. Sorry. It's different for these two. These folks' fiscal year ends in like April or May.
Oh, okay.
So we won't get it till
next year.
But they got $50 million in Zuckbucks in 2020. Lucky them. Their previous annual budgets had been typically $1 million or less. So banner year for the fundraising department. The thing that I want to stress is they were created in 2016 by a man named David Becker. Now, David Becker, in the newspapers, you see, well, you know, he worked at the Department of Justice in the voting section. Obviously, again, Kalita, he's an expert. Under Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush. So, obviously, nonpartisan, glorious expert. Just don't ask him any questions, right? The thing is, he left the Department of Justice. In 2005, there was a nasty ethics complaint against him. Your friends, Hans von Spakovsky and J. Christian Adams, they were there at the time, too, and they saw just exactly what a less than squeaky clean sort of guy he was. The ethics complaint is stunning, and I believe they're on the record emails of proving this. The Department of Justice, obviously, those are the lawyers for the federal government, right? Well, sometimes the federal government is in lawsuits with other parties. And Mr. Becker, according to the emails, was trying to help out the other parties in those lawsuits.
The ones that the Department of Justice had sued.
Yes. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but you tell me, Kalita, I believe you have your JD. When a lawyer works with the lawyers for the other side of a suit in which he's employed, is there anything wrong with that?
Yes, that would violate the rules of professional responsibility. Because as I understand it, he was contacting the defendants and saying, I'll be happy to help you defend yourself, help you against fight this suit.
What would happen to you if you
did
that,
I would
Cleta?
Be disbarred.
Yeah,
and you would be disbarred. And the question is, why hasn't he been disbarred?
Yes, it's stunning. Somehow that did not make it into the New York Times story, alas. But anyway, so he had to leave under a cloud, though, as he likes to put it, of course, he received no punishment, just like your friend Lois Lerner at the IRS.
No punishment.
Received no punishment. In fact, when I pay my taxes, I'm proud to know those are going to pay her pension,
right,
which was not touched.
Right.
Nor did she in any other way receive any penalty. Same as Mr. Becker here. Again, nonpartisan experts. So he was next hired by People for the American Way.
And we know what a neutral organization
yes.
that was.
People for the American Way, they are a 501c4, so they're allowed to do lots of electioneering. And in fact, they literally invented borking, which is to say the vicious personal smearing of judicial nominees against my friend Judge Bork back in 1997.
It was in the 90s.
No, 87, all the way back to 87. So they invented the multi-million dollar campaigns against judicial nominees of vicious personal smears. Although, thank God, Mr. Bork wasn't alive to see that Kavanaugh got to outdo him in the horrors.
They outdid it against Justice Kavanaugh.
So this is a nasty political 501c4 operation. Now, that's why Mr. Becker desperately tries to hide this fact. He has kept that off of every bio of his. He's scrubbed it everywhere.
He doesn't talk about his
On work. His LinkedIn page, there's a gap after the Department of Justice. He doesn't, because of course, if you work for People of the American Way, the pretense that you're some neutral nonpartisan would be laughable. So he's vicious. He's tried to hide that everywhere he can. I'm proud to say that the New York Times was nice enough to confirm this fact in their article that got no attention, sadly. So then after he's at People of the American Way, he goes to another partisan operation, although one not as well known for being partisan, namely the Pew Charitable Trusts, where again, he's dealing with election matters. One election matter he did, and again, this is in leaked emails discovered in North Carolina. North Carolina has an absolute ban on online registration. But online voter registration. Mm-hmm. You can't do it in North Carolina for very good reasons. Why would you want people to be able to register online when you have no control over the process? But the Democrats controlled the election board in North Carolina some years ago, and they were desperately scrambling again, trying to help trying to get votes for Obama. They were trying to get around that. And so naturally they went to Becker, and in the emails you can see him trying to, I'm going to help you connect with lawyers in other states that have gotten around it. By the way, this is a great process thing. So the way that they got around it was you would pull out your phone and you'd register online, and then you'd use your finger to sign on your phone, right? And that would go to this company out, I think it was Colorado, somewhere a long way from North Carolina. Go out there, and that company would then, its computers would generate a voter registration form, and its auto pen would dupe your signature on your phone onto that. That, the Democrats tried to say, was not online voter registration, because here's a signed piece of paper with ink, right? So anyway, he was helping them do that.
And being paid by Pew. To
and
do
being
that.
Paid by Pew.
Also not supposed to be engaged in politics.
Yes. So the Center for Election Innovation and Research that Mr. Becker is running, their grants go almost entirely at the state level to the secretaries of state, which I hope your listeners are becoming experts in these things. Secretary of State in a state is typically the top election officer for the whole state. So their Zuck Bucks were basically going there. There was an exception there to that, and that was Michigan. Now, Michigan has, according to J. Christian Adams, whose opinion on this I would trust, probably the worst and most left-wing Secretary of State of any state in the country at the moment, Jocelyn Benson. And instead of giving it to her office, Mr. Becker gave it to a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonpartisan nonprofit that Ms. Benson had created a few years ago. And then, right before that money hit their accounts, she jumps off you know, away from the nonprofit, but that she had founded. But you know, somebody did a really cool thing. They went and looked at that C3 nonprofit's expenditures, and do you know where they spent their Zuck Bucks? On two Democratic Party PR firms. Again, helping people vote, Cleta. How can you be against this, right? Mm-hmm. They're just helping. Now, the priorities that Becker's nonprofit here was pushing with those secretaries of state were mainly mail voting, which, as we know, is the absolute safest way to have votes. Or no, wait, I'm sorry, I have that wrong. Jimmy Carter and Jim Baker had their big report that's actually the easiest way, I believe, to cheat. So not something that is a wonderful thing to encourage. And also early voting, which, again, we have to remember, the left has all these C3 groups that are registering people and getting them to the polls. They don't want early voting so it's convenient for those people. They wanted early voting so it's convenient for them to run as many buses. If I'm going to run buses for 3 weeks, I can get a lot more people to the polls than I'm going to run my buses for 1 week.
And it's also harder to find people who are able to take extended periods of time from jobs, et cetera, to serve as poll watchers or election officials. The longer period of time in which the election is conducted makes it really hard to staff and make it more transparent, as required by law in every state. But it's not an easy thing to get done.
Yep. Well, and I know...
Which they don't want. They don't want observers. They don't want transparency.
I seem to recall there was a few controversies in 2020 about election observers.
Yes,
yeah, they don't seem to be fond of them. The last thing I will say about Center for Election Innovation and Research, and this goes back to the previous episode where we talked about Arabella Advisors being this huge $1 billion a year almost...
Funding source
for lefties. Gosh, Mr. Becker has in the past, not in 2020 that we know of, but in the past has received major funding from Arabella Advisors, which absolutely is a left-wing electioneering effort. So now back to the folks you first mentioned, the nonprofit C3 that got the overwhelming majority of the Zuck Bucks, $350 million or so. Again, we don't have all we know roughly, but not every last dollar for all these things yet. That's, again, Center for Tech and Civic Life. It, too, was a little C3 nonprofit that only had a budget of maybe $1 million a year. So completely unknowns. Now, there's, I think, multiple reasons for that. One is nobody's ever heard of these. I hadn't heard of these things, and I studied the left. So Lord knows the lazy reporters at mainstream media have never heard of these things. Another thing is, you know, if this all does end up blowing up in their face, which we can only hope if people pay enough attention, well, it's no loss to the left if these two C3s disappear. The left has thousands of electioneering C3s. Big deal. We, you know, you did a great job in 2020, you know, and nobody working at these places is going to lack for jobs or have a resume that will impress folks.
That's true.
Right? So let's go a little deeper into the background of Center for Tech and Civic Life. It was created by and is still led by refugees, I like to say, from yet another left-wing nonprofit, the New Organizing Institute. Now, that you can tell, that's a little less banal name than usual. Mm-hmm. It sounds a touch more political, and you'd be right. It does not exist anymore, but it was not a C3, which that's the kind that have to stay nonpartisan. It was a C4 nonprofit, which is allowed to do much more work in elections and you know, get in the political trenches. And it was Democracy Alliance endorsed. Again, going back to our previous thing, Democracy Alliance is the cabal of donors that Soros and some other billionaires have set up to win elections for them with nonprofits after they realized the Democratic Party couldn't do it on its own. It was co-founded by this New Organizing Institute, where the folks came from, was co-founded by union operatives. Again, cannot ever stress enough, conservatives ignore unions. They are still the 800-pound gorillas of politics. If you're not watching unions, understanding unions, figuring out how to keep union power grabs from happening, you are not a good conservative, at least not a smart one. So this New Organizing Institute, where the Zuck Buck grantee folks originally worked, thousands of Democratic operatives trained year after year. Mm-hmm. No, maybe kind of sort of nonpartisanship here. They trained Democratic Party operatives in the top electioneering techniques that the Obama folks had very impressively developed. In fact, just before the new Organizing Institute collapses, the Washington Post runs a gushing big story on them, and it calls them the Democratic Party's Hogwarts for digital wizardry.
When would that have been?
Let's see. They died. When did they die here?
I don't think it says.
It doesn't say in my... We have a long article on the main website by Hayden Ludwig about this called The New Organizing Institute. And I'm going to give you a couple of goodies from there. I will hit that at some point here, but it's like 2011?
Oh, so a while ago.
Some years back.
And then did they dissolve once they...
Yeah, they did. Oh, here we go. It's like 2014-15, that's when they collapsed.
Okay.
And we'll get to why they collapsed, because that is not insignificant either. But the point is, the Washington Post accurately reported that this place was a spectacular engine of Democratic Party victories.
Was it written about in that article post-Obama re-election about how wonderfully the Obama...
Oh, how brilliant they all were on all the digital stuff? That's a great question. I remember that. I want to say that was a New Yorker article, if I remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I promise we'll look that up.
I remember the article, but I don't remember which organizations they talked about.
Well, again, because the left has... Again, this is the left has so many.
They have so many.
No one on this call has heard of the New Organizing Institute.
No.
But they were a powerhouse for years winning elections. And they gave birth to the Zuckbuck entity. So let me give you just a little bit more background on this, because it's such a magnificent portrait of how the left uses these supposedly nonpartisan nonprofits. Now, this one at least was a C4, which was more admittedly a straight out political
group.
They
can engage in political activity as long as it's not a majority of their program expenditures.
So here's the thing. It was people who had worked there and were big veterans of that impressive Democratic Party operation mm-hmm. that came over and creates the Center for Tech and Civic Life. Now, this long article that we have on our website about them, about the way these two groups work together, these two groups, now one was the C4 that the Post and everybody admitted was, oh, this is a partisan powerhouse. And then there's the C3 that got the $350 million or so from Zuckbucks in 2020. On our big article about them, to make clear to people how indistinguishable these things are for the left, we actually have 10 snippets, 10 sentences and things yanked off of both groups' websites. Because you can see the old C4 is defunct, but you know, the Wayback Machine lets you go grab it, and that's the kind of research we do. So we have a 10 part quiz for you. In fact, you should go read the article and take the quiz, see if you even pass. I bet you don't even get a passing grade on this, because you cannot tell from the verbiage
whether it's
the C3 or the C4. So yeah, it's all like, learn how to reach displaced and hard to reach voters with language barriers. Hispanics are the future of progressive growth. In jail or have a conviction, the only time you cannot register and vote is when you're serving a sentence in jail or prison. Fight voter suppression in your campaign by talking with voters about IDs. I mean, you've heard all this stuff. It's mm-hmm. all standard left-wing stuff, and there is no way to tell whether it's mm-hmm. the C4 that can legally electioneer or the C3 that cannot. Now, another little thing about this New Organizing Institute where the Zuckbuck pass-through was born from. Touch about how it came into being. It was formed, gosh, surprise, surprise, by two labor activists. It was formed in 2004. One of them was a top AFL-CIO strategist, mm-hmm. just like we've been talking about in other areas. The other was a guy named Zach Exley. He was the founding community organizer mm-hmm. for MoveOn.org.
Oh, my.
In its 2003 anti-Iraq war campaign. And he was, I love this one. He was a fiend for Howard Dean, one of the further left candidates of the 2004 election. In fact, he was accused of rigging MoveOn's online primary in favor of Howard Dean over the establishment candidates. Don't know if that's true, but it wouldn't be surprising if he had a little manipulation of the digital world there. He got a fellowship from the George Soros Open Society Foundation, as mm-hmm. like so many other wonderful activists. Now, later on, he moved on to Bernie Sanders' campaign. He was, of course, a Bernie bro. Because again, we are not talking here about establishment liberal Democrat folks in
we're talking about.
We're talking about hard lefties. Yes. So he worked on Sanders' failed 2016 presidential campaign. And out of it, he created multiple groups. Again, that's something the left is always doing, creating new groups. Great to be here at the Conservative Partnership Institute because it itself is a relatively new group and it is helping incubate groups and increase the capacity of existing groups. That is absolutely something the left does that we need to imitate. But, you know, this guy Exley, who helped start the new Organizing Institute, after the Bernie Sanders campaign, he created something you may have heard of. It's a PAC called Justice Democrats. Mm. Now, our savvy folks will know that is the hard left PAC that took out the number three Democrat in the U.S. House of Representatives in order to get Ocasio-Cortez take that seat. So again, this is not standard ordinary Democrat machine politics. This is the Sorosy hard left folks taking over the Democratic Party.
Well, and I do think that the reason that AOC has had this outsized impact is because her very presence is a constant reminder of if you don't hew to the leftist line, we'll primary you. But let's go on to the CTCL.
So that is the background where the people from CTCL came from. Now we'll go just to the CTCL's website. Oh, sorry. First, again, to explain, these folks, they didn't send their money to the secretaries of state at the state level. They sent it locally. They sent it to different states, as you well know more than I, have lots of different jurisdictions. States differ. Some states, it's only counties that control elections. Sometimes it's counties and townships and cities. And
right.
It's all complex. But the point is, almost all the money from Center for Tech and Civic Life was going to the localist jurisdictions to help the election. Now, let's just look at that website for Center and Tech and Civic Life to understand where they come from and whether they're really the wonderful nonpartisans that the media tells us they are. They list, quote, key funders, and partners. Okay? So here's some of the folks they list for that. One is Google. Now, I went to opensecrets.org, which is a fine left-wing money tracker.
But they do have a good website.
Yeah, they're lefties, but they do an excellent job with opensecrets.org. We use their data all the time. And if you look, they have a way for you to look at Google, and you can look at it. They combine not only the corporate giving by Google, but also all of the giving by employees of Google, because when you make a 200 or more donation, you put down your employer. So Google is one of the key funders and partners of the nonpartisan Center for Tech and Civic Life. And according to Open Secrets, the left-wing site, the total contributions from its own treasury and its employees split 95% Democrat and 5% Republican. Another key funder and partner for Center for Tech and Civic Life is Facebook. Now, Cleta, they are models of bipartisanship. They only gave 92% of their total political spending in 2020 to Democrats. It also has Rock the Vote now as a key funder and partner. Now, again, Rock the Vote, classic left-wing C3 electioneering. Rock the Vote was created years ago to go after kids, especially college kids, because the left knows if you're an 18-year-old, you probably know less than a 58-year-old, so you'll be easier pickings. And so Rock the Vote works with Center for Tech and Civic Life. Now, another is Center for Civic Design. Again, lovely, bland. Are you against civic design, Cleta? What could be wrong with the Center for Civic Design? But I remember J. Christian Adams noticing that Terry McAuliffe, who I believe is about as partisan as you get, when he became governor of Virginia, he hired the Center for Civic Design to redo the poll worker instructions in Virginia. Now, Virginia law, to this day, requires government issued photo ID to vote. And that's what the poll worker instructions traditionally had, Christian tells me. But now, they, after the Center for Civic Design redesigned them, it just says ID.
I think that maybe the legislature is even the Democrats.
Did they finally get rid of it?
I think
well, you're the expert on that. But in Terry McAuliffe's supervised elections, they hadn't, and apparently this change occurred. Mm-hmm. Last thing on key funders and partners there is Women Donors Network. Now, again, it sounds bland, but I can tell you that is a very radical group of donors. They were some of the earliest donors to the Black Lives Matter organizations.
Oh, wow.
When people like when even the left wing foundations and whatnot were scared because of how radical those places were. So these are the people that Center for Tech and Civic Life tells you are key funders and partners. None of them are nonpartisan. All of them are seriously left wing.
But one of the things that I think is very concerning is that the Center for Tech and Civic Life is listed on the website of the Election Assistance Commission as a nonpartisan organization that will come in and help train election officials for free on how to use technology. It's one of the ways that CTCL, I think, built relationships and probably one of the things that ultimately led to their receiving all of the Zuckerbucks money.
Yeah, well, and again, if you're Zuckerberg and whoever is whispering in his ear to do this, say possibly Vinita Gupta and David Plouffe, good reasons to think that, you want to give money to a grantee that's going to have contacts all over the place.
Which they did.
Yes. We absolutely should have one digression here, which is that, what the defenders of CTCL and groups like that will say is you're right. That's what they do. They help carry out the elections, and you are just trying to suppress votes from people who are going to help increase the vote. And the answer is, if it's a completely neutral increasing of the vote, that's a good thing.
Although I got to tell you, I do not believe it is the province of an election administration office to be worrying about voter turnout. That's the responsibility of the campaigns, the candidates, the political parties. The job of the election administration office is to administer the elections, to make sure that you have clean voter rolls, that you don't allow for all this mischief, that you have proper audits and chain of custody and all the things that should be done. And but that doesn't appear to be what they actually did.
No, it doesn't. And as I said, the crucial thing is they're going to say, we helped people vote. We help more people vote. Then the question becomes, but did you do it in a truly neutral way? Because that is the critical question.
So tell us some of what your research has shown.
Sure. I'll go through three of the battleground states to start with. First, we'll do Arizona.
And then what we can do is you go through those three states. And then you're going to make some additional slides we'll tell people how to find those on your website, on our website, and we'll send that out to people. So
great. Well, because yes, there's always reams of data.
Right.
But I've picked some that I think are really clear on critical battleground states. So one of the central things we did was to compare the 2020 presidential vote in a state and the 2016 presidential vote in a state, right? How did those change? Now, in the case of Arizona, we're going to do Arizona first here. In counties that didn't get any Zuckerberg funding, didn't get helped in their elections, golly gee, look what happened. The Republicans actually did better than the Democrats at increasing their 2020 vote. The Republicans upped their vote from 16 to 20 by 46%. The Democrats, 6 points less, only 40%, right? But then look what happens in the zucked counties that got his bucks. The Republicans did even better than they had in the unfunded counties. They were up 67% in presidential, but the Democrats were up 72%. Mm. So Republicans did better won the turnout war in the unzucked and Democrats in the zucked. And by the way, the other thing about that is the difference there is massive. So the funding, roughly speaking, the funding changed the Republican turnout. It boosted it about 50% to get funded. So it did boost Republican vote, but it boosted the Democrats over 80% better. Mm. So these are big differences. Now, in vote terms, what this means is that in the funded counties, the Democrats had 122,000 vote margin
over the Republicans.
Yes, in the funded counties.
So in Arizona, the counties that received the Zuckerberg's money resulted in a 122,000 vote margin of Democrats over Republicans.
Yep. And the statewide victory margin was barely more than 10,000.
That was the margin between Biden and President Trump.
Yes. So it is literally an order of magnitude greater margin for Democrats in the funded counties versus the whole state.
So take us to then Pennsylvania.
Well, in Pennsylvania, let's before we get to the vote numbers, let's look at the money numbers, because I said that's, again, mm-hmm. critical. And we don't have absolutely every last dollar that went into Pennsylvania because, again, the places are refusing to give it out. The CTCL's fiscal year is over in January. So by December 15th, they should have to pony this up of this year. But we know most of the grants that went. We know the biggest grants. So these numbers will, and we will, of course, update when all the stuff's available. The second it's available, we'll update all our numbers. But this is very close to what the final things are going to be, I'm confident, because we've got the big grants and most of the grants. So let's look at the per capita funding, because somebody's going to say, like, well, of course Philadelphia got more money than some little rural county. Yes, of course it did. And the difference would be population, right? So for all of our numbers, we make that adjustment. We look at what is the per capita funding. And if you got 1 million people, you're going to have more than 10,000 people, counting with 10,000. But the per capita shows how egregious this difference was. The highest per capita funding in the whole state for a Biden county was to Philadelphia County, which you said long before the election would be ground zero for the election. And everybody in America who knew who the vice president was knew that Philadelphia is ground zero. So in Philadelphia, Center for Tech and Civic Life gives the local election office $6.32 for every man, woman, and child in Philadelphia. It was a staggering increase in their budget. Now, by comparison, the highest known per capita funding of a county that Trump won in Pennsylvania was $1.23. So $6.32 per person for Biden's best county, $1.23 for Trump's luckiest county. And by the way, that $1.23, they were rolling in it for a Trump county, because most of the Trump counties didn't even break into the dollar, didn't bust a dollar. They were in the cents.
Oh, wow.
So that's the kind of difference you've got. Okay, now let's go back to those presidential vote comparison that we're looking at, 2020 versus 2016 in the state of Pennsylvania for the president. Republicans, great year. They were up 266,000 in the funded counties of Pennsylvania. But the Democrats were up 460. So that's 194,000 vote margin in the funded counties for Democrats, 194,000 votes for Dems. The statewide victory margin was not even half that. It's around 81,000.
So this is
double.
So this is why Christian Adams calls this the real Kraken.
This is the real Kraken. You are absolutely looking.
You know,
at
one
it.
Of the things I had heard, and I guess you're waiting to get specific numbers, but I had read, because early on, it seemed as though CTCL had announced the amount of the grants to Philadelphia, et cetera. And then they stopped doing that, I think. They stopped.
Well, you know, it was somebody in Philly. I don't think CTCL gets credit for that, although I can't swear to this. If my memory serves, it was reporters actually were interested because it was a big deal. It was so much money that it was a big deal.
It was so much money in that the annual budget of the Philadelphia Election Office had been $11 million a year. And in this one funding source was over $12 million. So they got more money from Zuckerberg money through CTCL than their annual budget. Yeah. And then I have talked to people who were watching what was unfolding in Philadelphia, and they said it was just out of control, wild.
Another thing that happened, and this needs to happen everywhere CTCL funded, and we're working on that. We're literally making government records requests of every single place in the country that took CTCL money. And other groups are doing a lot of this, and everybody should, because those election officials should know they're being watched, and all of this should come out. But one of the things that came out in Philadelphia, of course, was the contract came out. Mm-hmm. Because again, the money was so big and people were just stunned. So, because here's the thing, you know, as all of us know, money comes with strings, whether it's mommy giving you an allowance or a foundation giving you $10 million, there are strings attached. And so CTCL didn't just cut this check and hand it off to nice little Miss Election official and say, have a nice election. Uh-uh. They negotiated contracts that required things. And in the case of Philadelphia, one of the top requirements was a lot of drop boxes all over the city.
Right. And I know of people with whom I have spoken who were watching it. And the law in Pennsylvania is that you can drop one ballot. And there were people just dropping multiple ballots. But they couldn't get anything done about that at the time. But
yeah, oddly enough, in the rural counties where people would have to go miles for a drop box, that wasn't apparently a problem. But if you had to go two blocks in Philly, that's too much to ask.
So let's go to Georgia.
Sure. Another hotly contested state, needless to say. Here's how the presidential vote changed in the Zucked 2020 election versus 2016. In the counties where Zuckerberg funded, the Republicans, again, good year, up 207,000 more votes in 2020 over 2016 for president. But the Democrats did a little better than the Republicans, 207. Democrats did 530,000 more votes in 2020 than 2016. So Stacey Abrams absolutely earned her Christmas bonus this year. So that is a margin in the Zucked counties of 323,000 votes for Democrats. 323. And the statewide margin for Democrats, of course, again, barely made it past 10,000. So this is more than 25 times the margin in the Zuckerberg counties.
Well, and I know that you have drilled down and done research and continuing to do research in each and every one of these states that receive. Well, actually, I guess you're doing the target states, but my understanding is that this Zuckerberg money went to many states that were not battleground states. Have you all looked at that?
Yep,
too?
Let me pull out my other thing here because I have some of these fun things. Texas, you know, wasn't typically considered a battleground state, and in fact was a pretty safe state, as it turned out, for the Republican side. But it got staggering money. We have a Texas state report, and I'll just give you a few of the amazing numbers here. Again, beautiful example of how they were targeting just the spots that Biden needed if he was going to be able to win Texas, and also the disparate impact the funding had. So in the funded counties of Texas, Trump's vote was up 25%, but in the unfunded counties, it was 24%. So in other words, being a funded county in Texas made basically no difference at all for Trump. He performed the same in both. But Mr. Biden versus Hillary, 4 years earlier in those funded counties. In funded counties, Biden was up 14%. Mm-hmm. In unfunded counties, Biden was up 7%.
So it doubled it.
It doubled it. So it made no difference to Trump virtually and doubled what happened for Biden. That shows you how well these things are targeted. And by the way, Dallas got the largest known Center for Tech and Civic Life grant of any place in the country. Dallas got $15 million. Because, of course, what would be the absolute best place for Democrat turnout in the state of Texas? Gee, I guess that is, of course, Dallas, the city, not, needless to say, all the suburbs. And Houston also got a massive amount of money as well. So Dallas got $5.74 per person living in the whole county, or $25.27 per Biden vote.
Well, you know, Scott, this is all we'll make sure that there is access and to link things. But as we wrap up, tell us what you've been doing and what some of the states are doing and what people should do about this to try to stop this kind of interference with our a neutral election administration system.
Yes, so that it's easy to vote and hard to cheat. Because Zuckbucks, you know, one of the things I will say, the reason that ought to motivate everybody to engage with this and be worried about this is, let's just for the sake of argument, say there was not a single fraudulent vote cast in the whole country, not one anywhere. And let's say that all those incompetent big cities that can't deliver mail or pick up garbage or anything else, let's say that in those big cities, there was not one vote miscounted. They didn't make any mistake at all. None. No vote fraudulently cast, no vote inaccurately counted. Zuckbucks is still a complete and total outrage because it is absolutely pushing money to turn big cities into Democrat vote turnout machines. That's absolutely what it was. And that's wrong, even if there wasn't a smidge of fraud anywhere. Now, I suspect some of your listeners might be a little suspicious that there might have been fraud in a few of those cities, in which case, of course, Zuckbucks was fabulous at inflating it. Mm-hmm. I don't claim to know, but I know those two things. One, I know it's an outrage that it was funded this way. And two, I know that if there was any fraud, Zuckbucks was a fabulous way of boosting the fraud. And that's why everybody should care. Now, one thing I've been doing, and I'm happy to do it anywhere else anybody would like, but I've testified in a number of states, as an expert witness on exactly this awful scam that you see, because this should be an easy thing for all. Again, this is a universal thing for Americans. I don't want any billionaire taking over local election offices. I don't want a Republican billionaire doing it. I don't want a Democratic billionaire doing it. Obviously, that's wrong. Any American understands instantly that's just wrong because there's going to be strings to those money. And billionaires shouldn't exist, according to the left. So we don't need to have private funding of elections, it would seem to me. And I'm proud to say every state where I've testified, the legislature has passed heavy restrictions on the private funding of election offices. Some of them got vetoed. By Democratic governors, oddly enough, who don't have trouble with these billionaires, I guess. But so I'm happy to do it in many more states. There are, I believe the last time I checked, it's around a dozen states have at least some restrictions on this kind of thing. Obviously, there's much other election reform that's needed, but that's where you are the expert and not I. Another thing that needs to be done is in some states, state legislators have been demanding more information out of those local election offices. What did you do with that money? Whom did you hire and where did you find the people that you hired and what training did you give them and what kinds of ads did you make and what firms did you hire to make those ads? And, you know, every single detail needs to be dug into. We're already finding some egregious examples of, let's put it this way, Cleta, you know, I have studied this for decades and I'm shocked at how egregious this stuff is. In fact, your dear friends at the National Vote at Home Institute, again, nice sounding name. Gosh, they must be neutral and nonpartisan and wonderful experts. But in fact, the head of the Wisconsin National Vote at Home Institute took over election offices as a private citizen from a nonprofit. He, by the way, I love the title. He was called the Grant Mentor for the actual election officials, multiple of whom resigned in disgust and outrage because of the how he was trashing Wisconsin election laws. And all this is documented. And again, we have emails. We have the documented emails. We have the local election list officials in places like Green Bay saying, he wants a, he's got himself a government ID. He's not a government employee. He wants the keys to the counting room. He wants to do this, that, and the other thing that are against, you know, the rules. You know, absolutely outrageous, awful stuff that, and I'm quite confident that if we dig into Atlanta and Milwaukee and Phoenix and other places in this way, we're going to find this out. So state legislatures should be investigating this. U.S. Congress should be investigating this. They obviously they have jurisdiction over the federal tax law that these C3s appear to be violating by turning themselves into nonpartisan turnout machines. So that is a big deal. Another thing I will say, though, is because, you know, often people hear me talk about all this, all the left is doing, and they'll say, you know, you really depress me. And so let me remind people, and this is a Christian Adams insight on this, but the Zuckbucks, one way you know that Zuckbucks work the way that I've been saying is through an unusual phenomenon that happened in the election that we need to, that conservatives shouldn't forget, and it should keep people from despairing. And that is, on the one hand, the Democrat presidential vote in 2020 was off the charts amazing. Mm-hmm. They had a spectacular year, and Mr. Zuck certainly helped out on that. But they lost seats in the House of Representatives, and they lost entire legislative chambers at the state level. They lost three state chambers, and they didn't gain a single one. Now, Eric Holder, by comparison, he was not getting a Christmas bonus in 2020.
Because he raised hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, he raised.
Because they wanted to be in charge of redistricting.
So, Cleta, why did this happen, huh? Why did the Democrats do spectacularly well in the presidential vote and yet lousy on the state legislative elections and the House of Representative elections? Well, that's an easy thing, because all Zuckbucks did was give steroids to the turnout machines in the big cities,
which were already Democratic.
But yes, they already have those House seats. Yep. They already have those state legislator seats. Didn't do anything for that. So that both shows you that what Zuckerberg's money was really doing, but it also shows you that the left is not
an invulnerable juggernaut. They don't win.
They're not an invulnerable juggernaut. The one other thing I will say is, and we've watched this with you in Virginia, the other thing that needs to be looked at is, because this was so spectacularly successful, because their decades of efforts at improving their turnout machine in all in every way possible, with every rule tweak and with every cheating with different organizations, all the rest of it, they know how valuable that was. And they also know that they might not as easily be able to get the private money going in to do this. So there's almost certainly likely to be some efforts to use state government money or federal money to do the same kinds of things. Now, obviously, it'll be should be harder for them to do it in such a the money shouldn't be able to be distributed quite so disproportionately.
But we have to work at
it.
But we have
still
to watch it, and we have to be prepared, and we have to work at it.
In Virginia, where I live, the Board of Elections, or well, that isn't the right name for the Department of Elections,
state
whatever
Board of Elections.
The State Board of Elections, the state election folks. They only asked the legislature for $500,000, and of course they're all Democrats. But the Democrat controlled legislature gave them $4.5 million.
Yes, and I will tell you that the Public Interest Legal Foundation has sent a FOIA request to the State Board of Elections about all of that, and so there will be more to come on that.
Well, exactly. Everybody should be digging into this. We will keep digging into this. I know you will keep digging into this. Because elections really matter. Hard to cheat, easy to vote. That's the mantra.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. We appreciate it so much. We'll work with you to make sure that we get everything posted. We'll continue to tell everybody, send everybody to capitalresearch.org, and that's capital, C-A-P-I-T-A-L, research.org. And it's a wealth of information. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to do. And we thank you so much for all that you do. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Cleta. Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Editing is by Creative Patriots. Please help us grow this podcast by sharing this episode with a friend. We rely on your word of mouth to get the word out because big tech can't be trusted, they try to cancel us daily, and they don't want us talking on social media about election fraud. Help fight back by visiting our website, www.whoscounting.us, and sign up for our election integrity newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, and get the real election integrity news.